Have you been wandering through life with no purpose? Are you looking for a catalyst to change your life for the better? These Servant Leadership podcasts will change your perspective of yourself, others, and your creator. This transformational leadership approach uses seven simple tools to help you understand your purpose in life. Please join Dave Kuhnert and Chris Seegers for today's podcast.
This is Servant Leadership Podcast. This is Servant Leadership Podcast number 18, Q&A. Well, we've been through all the material, Chris, and over the span of time here, we've received a lot of questions from the different classes, the Facebook page, and just general comments. So I thought we'd do a separate podcast to kind of put all this together and answer some of the questions that maybe some of the other people out there may have.
Absolutely. And definitely any of the listeners, if you have additional questions, hit Dave up on the Facebook page or on the website. Let them know if you've got additional things that you want answered. One of the questions that came up quite a bit is, how do you decide which of the five leadership styles to use, which is appropriate for which instance?
That's a good question. So the five leadership styles, again, if you remember, we have directive, which is all about assigning the there, here, and path to others. And again, there's nothing wrong with it. There's a time and a place for it. It's not very developmental, but you would use that in a situation where time is of the essence or maybe safety is involved. You've got transactional, which is all about reward and coercive power. If you do this, this is what you get. If you don't, this is what happens to you. That's where most people are in life, so that's a very appropriate one to use for most people. Then, of course, you've got participative, where you kind of show them the there-here path, and then delegative, which is much more developmental, where you're saying, okay, here's the there. You figure out the path, and I'll just come check in with you as often as necessary. And finally, we have transformational, which is we have a shared vision of there-here path. We understand with clarity what we're trying to achieve, and we know our current reality is shared transparently. And when there's a lack of clarity or there's a lack of current reality, we step in and we do a moment of truth, and we share truth with others. And that's transformational. So what is the right one to use? Well, it's going to be situationally dependent. You're going to have to look at and consider the time involved that you have to deal with them, the maturity level of that person, the experience level, whatever it may be, and how can I best develop them right now without costing us too much time or too much money for what we're trying to do. So if we can be transformational, if we have that, we've built that in, then that's where you want to be. Because, well, first of all, it doesn't require as much supervision. You can get a lot more done because everybody believes in what we're trying to do. But you may end up just being transactional or directive. Hey, I'm going to build you toward transformational, but right now you're just not there. So if you do this, you're going to get a reward. And if you don't, you're not going to work here anymore, whatever it may be, trying to get the task done until you can build enough repetition to create good habits and then start working towards the greater good or being transformational. So the answer is situation is really dependent.
They're all useful in different instances, but we want to move towards transformational.
Exactly. Yeah, good way to put it.
Gotcha. Good. Okay. Here's one that I struggled with initially, and I know a lot of, in the classes, we have a lot of people that when we put this to them, they kind of come back to us and ask this question. But the question is, you know, trying to work through finding your there, right? Your transcendent reason for living, your why. And if I'm struggling to find my there, to capture it, to write it down, what can I do to help figure it out?
It's a tough one. It's going to be different for everyone. But one thing I've seen, and a couple people I know have done this, is they started off with a blank piece of paper, and they just thought about, in a perfect world, if I could dream about doing anything I want, what would I want to achieve in this life? What is this life all about in a perfect world? And they kind of write down all these dreams and lofty goals. Then they also write down their spiritual gifts. And you can go online and do those spiritual gifts tests and figure it out, or you may even know what they are already. But what are my spiritual gifts, and what are my dreams that I want to accomplish in this life? What am I passionate about? And then next you go through the list, and you start with those five whys again. Well, I wanted to be a millionaire. Okay, why? And then you just work through it. Well, I wanted to be able to do this. Why? And then you get to the base reason. And when you go through the five whys with each of them, and then you get rid of all the ones that are just about serving me. And you start looking at the ones that are about serving others and obeying God. And when you find those, and then you match your spiritual gifts to those, and then you start to meld those together and figure out, okay, what is my transcendent there? How do I leverage my spiritual gifts to accomplish what I'm passionate about in life that's about serving others and obeying God. We don't want to go too far outside of that because that's what Christ told us to do. And we can change those words a little bit, but ultimately it's all going to revolve somewhere about obedience or faith and being a servant leader towards others.
That's a good metric, right? If you've started kind of trying to evaluate what your there is, if what you've written down is about self-serving, you probably need to visit it again, right? It should be serving others in some capacity.
Right, yeah. It's exactly what Scripture told us to do. So we get rid of those, cross those out. And again, that's just the me there. We all have that in us. We all have things we want to accomplish for ourselves, and that's okay. If I want to be a millionaire, that's fine. Just don't let it become my transcendent there. Don't let it get in front of me and be the only thing I want, because that's idolatry. We don't want to do that. We want to be focused on God. We want to be focused on others. The other stuff that we want to do and things we want to accomplish in life, that's okay. Those are good goals. Make good, smart goals and get after it. But don't let it get in the way of the there. I'm going to use those goals to move me towards my there. And if they're not moving me towards my transcendent there, I need to get rid of them. They're not good goals. They're moving me towards the me there. They're just serving me. If I want to have $1 million so I can go out and party hard, probably not a good reason to do that. If I want to have $1 million because I want to create jobs for others, or I want to set up a charitable trust, well, that's totally different. That's a good goal. That's something to work for. And that's awesome. So how can I fulfill my there with my gifts? Well, remember, we're all members of the same body. Christ is the head, and you might be a finger, and I might be a foot. But we all have different gifts, so we all have different things we're good at. And to create that one body, we want to leverage those gifts. I don't want to be a finger trying to be a foot. It's not going to work out too well for me. So if I'll just be the foot and recognize that my gifts are about being a foot, and I can walk real well, but I'm never going to be able to wave to others, that's okay. I'm going to use those gifts to fulfill those goals and that passion in my life to serve others and to obey God. And there's a lot of great examples out there. And again, mine is serve others to the glory of God. Very short, very simple, and easy for me to remember because I can't remember things very well. So if I just keep it simple, when I'm trying to remember and I'm trying to measure the me there versus the we there, serve others to the glory of God. In what I'm doing right now, am I serving others and am I glorifying God? If I'm not, well, I need to move away. It's just that structure I put in my life to keep me focused on the spirit instead of the flesh.
That's good. So, yeah, then we talked quite a bit about conflict and saying that conflict isn't a bad thing. It can produce a lot of good when you interact in conflict in the proper ways. And so one of the questions was, which conflict resolution style is best? And could you just go into some of the styles and kind of what we ought to be trying to achieve?
Yeah, so if we recall, we have five styles of conflict resolution. We have competing, where it's a win-lose, right? There's my way or the highway. We have collaborating, which is a win-win. That's what the question was about. You've got compromise, which is I win some and I lose some, and they lose some and they win some. We have accommodating, which is I lose, you win. And then we have avoiding, which is no winner or loser. Kick the can down the road a little bit. So you immediately think, hey, win-win, that's got to be the best, right? Collaborate. And that's a great place to be, but you can't always collaborate. If it's about values, your personal values, you should be competing. That shouldn't be a compromise. That should not be an accommodation or an avoidance. You should be competing on your values. If it's something you value, if you value Christ, if you value your religion, if you value whatever it is that's important in your life, you should compete on that. Same token goes, if it's something that's not that important and you can serve others, accommodate. Accommodate them. Let them get their way. Let them win. It's not important to you anyway. But if you can do a win-win, a collaboration, that's wonderful, but that's not always the case, nor should it always be the case. You want to compete on values, and you can avoid or accommodate on stuff you don't care about. So again, like you said, Chris, conflict isn't good or bad. It's how we view it that's good or bad. And if we'll just recognize I don't have to win every time, then, hey, maybe I'll start to do a little bit more avoiding or accommodating when it's appropriate.
Yeah, that's good. These ones are a little bit more pointed questions. One question that we had a listener come up with was they've got adult children who aren't attending church, and so their question is, how can I get them to go?
Well, probably the easy answer is you can't. It's only three things I can control. I get to control whom I trust, and if I trust God, That's wonderful. And if I have the structure in my life about going to church every day, good. That's awesome. That's good. It's going to help me. It's going to focus me. It's going to be spending more time in community worshiping God. And I can worship God from home, but I need that structure to be
the accountability framework, kind of.
Yeah. So I have somebody there to learn with, to grow with, side by side, to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, that I'm worshiping as often as much as I can. And that's just a great structure to help us with that. I get to learn more about Scripture and to be closer to God through learning and through Scripture at church. But you can't force them to go. What you can do is control the three things you can control: your perspective and your actions. Referent power. Get after it. Get out there and strengthen those pillars. Strengthen your values. Show them how to live life right through your personal example. By you trying to control them, by trying to manipulate them to go to church. This is about influencing others to get there. And you could use these tools to manipulate. We don't want to manipulate. We want to influence. It's not how can I change them. How can I change me to influence them? So I'll go to church and I'll live life right and I'll get that referent power. And pretty soon it'll be, hey, mom or dad, how do I do what you've done in your life? You seem to just radiate that inner light. You seem to have those virtues that we talked about, those eulogy virtues. How do I do that? Well, let's put some structures in place. Start attending church. Come with us. We'd love to have you. But by trying to force them to do it or to miss you in church again today, you know, those passive-aggressive comments that we try to manipulate with, it's not helpful. In fact, it's probably going to push them away. If you want to have more influence, you have to give up control. Control yourself, influence them to get there, strengthen your values, strengthen your pillars, pray for them, and show them the way to live life right.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. So we got into the moment of truth tool. And one thing a lot of us struggle with in marriage is how to present truth in a kind way with grace and mercy. And the example is, and this is kind of a funny example, but the question is, I want to share truth, especially when my wife cooks me a bad meal. How do I break the news to her? How do I use the moment of truth in my marriage?
Oh, boy. Thankfully, my wife's a great cook. But so when she's asking, you know, she's cooking dinner, she's trying to serve you, and I get that the listener here, the question asker, they really appreciate that, it sounds like, just from the way they phrase the question. But at the same time, she's saying, is the meal good? Do you enjoy my cooking or do you enjoy my meal? And he's probably saying yes when he really doesn't, because he doesn't want to hurt her feelings. So there's two things at play here. First is, what is she really asking? Does she want to improve her culinary skills or not? Is she asking, am I a great chef? Or is she asking, more than likely, am I a good wife? Do you love me? Am I a good mother? Or will I be a good mother? And do you care about me? She's looking for security from you is what she's really asking. So sometimes we have to, the way the mind works, especially the difference between males and females, the female mind, everything's connected to everything. So if you don't like the meal, she's not a good wife. And that's how she'll read it. That's not your intention, and that makes no sense to a man. But for a woman, that's how it is. It's all connected. So she's not really probably asking, am I a great cook? But she probably is asking, do you love me? And ultimately, though, if you do want to share some truth about the culinary skills, and she's asking, find the right time, find the right place, the right moment, and you can just say, can I share some truth with you? You can ask permission to share truth and make sure that she understands that you do love her. You're not trying to soften the blow to take anything away from the moment of truth, but you're just trying to reassure her and help her feel secure. Again, women need security, men need significance. I've got to provide her that security. And if I hit her over the head with the moment of truth stick and just bludgeon her with it, she's not going to feel very secure because this is all interconnected for her. So can I share some truth with you? And I want you to know that this has nothing to do with anything else. I love you and you're important in my life. And I appreciate what you do for me by cooking me this awesome meal. We could use some salt or maybe burn it less or something, whatever it may be. But maybe I should cook the meal and demonstrate how to cook meals differently. differently.
I don't think anyone wants that, Dave.
I can't even boil water. Definitely nobody wants, unless it's a frozen pizza. I can do that.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at those as well. So, and this is a timely one. When you're going through the pit of despair, and maybe you're in multiple pits, right? You're struggling at your job, you're struggling in your family life, and everything's falling apart. How do you refocus on your there and just move forward, right? You get to this point of despair where there's too many things going wrong. I'm never going to be able to recover from this. I can't do anything right. And you still have your there, but you're not moving forward. How do you move forward?
It's a tough one. It's tough to, without getting too much into the situation of, you know, what that person's going through, maybe losing a job or going through a divorce or struggling with dependency. What is the there? And staying focused on that there, that transcendent there. Easy to say, but when you get into a really deep pit of despair, boy, it's so dark. You can't see the there anymore. So you just got to stay committed and keep pushing forward. You have to recognize, though, your current reality. First, I have to recognize I'm in the pit of despair. Am I in the victim circle? Well, let me do a little soul searching on that one. Am I feeling sorry for myself right now because I lost my job and I'm losing my family or I have a dependency issue? I could just be in the victim circle, and maybe I just need to move into the circle of choice and decide that I'm not going to be the victim anymore. I'm going to choose. I'm going to take action. I can control my actions. I can control my perspective. Yes, I'm in the pit of despair. Yes, things are tough. That's my current reality. Good. Straight up good. I get an opportunity to be closer to God right now. I'm changing my perspective. I get an opportunity to learn some valuable lessons about myself because I know God's going to make this work together for my good. I know He's a good God and a loving God. I know I can do this with Him. All things through Him are possible. And if I'll just rely on Him, find some accountability partners around me to help me remember that I can find that there and I can get myself to take that next step. But I'm not taking a step if I'm a victim. I'm not going to take a step unless I recognize my current reality. So even in the deepest, darkest pits where we can't even see our there, I know what's right. Do what I know and my heart will follow. Take a step down the path and stay committed to the there.
I love, too, how the act, learn, and adjust really comes in here. And that's what I always encourage people is, hey, look at your there and just move forward. Take one step. Because a lot of people just, and myself included, you get crippled and you're like, I don't want to make a bad choice. I don't want to do this. And that's where the act, learn, and adjust comes. Hey, take a step and then adjust and take another step and then adjust and keep focused on your there.
Yeah, you may find out that as you act, learn, and adjust, your there isn't what you want your there to be. Same thing with that question on that transcendent there. Maybe I'll recognize at some point that my there isn't quite that phrase. I'm going to change it up just a little bit to be more reflective of me. Sometimes I won't be able to narrow that down until I start moving. I can't sit stagnant my whole life waiting to come up with the perfect slogan for my there. I need to start acting. I act, learn, and adjust. I want my there, and that may be the most important thing about this whole podcast is having clarity of what I'm trying to achieve, or I'm never going to achieve it. It doesn't mean I can't change it, though. It doesn't mean that after I take a step and act, learn, and adjust, that maybe my there was a little more self-serving than it should have been, or maybe it doesn't leverage my spiritual gifts the way I would have wanted it to. So in that pit of despair, as I act, learn, adjust, I need to change my there just a little bit. Hopefully, we nail it down the first try and we just keep on moving. But ultimately, life's about choices. I get to choose. No matter how bad it gets, I have a choice.
And this kind of segues into that. We're running out of time a little bit, so we're going to just do one more question and then the final question that you wanted to dig into. But kind of back in that path, how do you get started serving others? How do you identify, hey, first step of how to use my talents, how to dig into it? What's a good segue for people?
Life and leadership is all about serving others to get there, influencing others to get there. It's all about serving others. So how do I get started? Where do I begin? I begin with me. I begin by strengthening my pillars, getting physically fit, growing my physical presence, showing up on time and looking the part. Growing my social relationships, finding deep, meaningful relationships with others, reaching out to others, being in control of my emotions and being mentally tough. I start to treat the people around me, my family and team, with a little bit more intentionality instead of just showing up and being present. Maybe I work my finances a little bit stronger, creating a budget to tell the dollar where to go instead of the dollar just going. And finally, and most importantly, I spend some time investing in my spiritual pillar. I show others what it means to have a close relationship with God, and I work my values, and I demonstrate how to do life right. When I really dig into it and I put energy into my pillars and I'm passionate about it, that pit of despair is going to be more shallow. When I hit it, it's going to be a road bump, a speed bump. I'm hardly going to recognize it because I'm ready. I'm prepared. I can handle it. And the next time I hit one, it's going to be even more shallow because now I've changed my perspective. I can look back and say, you know what? I've been through worse. God's prepared me for this. I can do this. I keep my eye on the prize, and I keep moving forward, and I stay committed. And through my personal example, I can serve others. There's something different about you. When they come to you and say that, it's opened a door to share Christ. There's a lot of ways to serve other people. And one of the best ways is through just doing life the way God intended you to. Get into System 3 and react with those emotions in a manner in which you're going to be serving them. Don't let the emotion tell you what to do. Use your spiritual self to tell you what to do.
So the last question we're going to dig into is, how often should someone move places within the Freedom V?
So if you remember, the Freedom V is built with clear expectations and clear consequences, and they're probably in several places in the Freedom V with different things. So if you have a child who is cleaning their room well as a chore, but they're not doing the dishes well, you don't want to say, okay, child, you're all the way back down in the Freedom V because of one thing you're not doing well. We don't want to get after them for not cleaning their room well when that's what they do well. It's the dishes we want to focus on. So we want to provide them more structure around dinner time. And that may look like after dinner, you don't get to go into the living room until you wash the plates, whatever it may be. So I've moved them down in the Freedom V just in that aspect of their life. So the Freedom V and where people are, and it can seem pretty simple. I move them up and down. But actually, they're in multiple planes in that Freedom V at any given time. It just depends on where they're at. Maybe as a child, they're not all the way in the bottom in some things, but in other things, they are. So you're going to move them up and down based on how they handle the freedom they have. If they don't handle the freedom of getting the car keys real well and coming home when they're supposed to and being accountable for themselves, they're probably not responsible enough to drive or to be given the car. We need to wait until they gain that maturity. Children don't really fully form the frontal lobe of their brain, especially boys, until 21. I think girls are 20 or 19. But the frontal lobe of your brain is where your judgment comes in. And we're trying to grow them to be good adults. And at 18, we consider them legally an adult. But yet, their frontal lobe is still not fully formed. They're not capable, in all cases, of making the best decisions always. Hopefully, we move them in that direction. So sometimes they're going to cross the boundary of the Freedom V. Then it's time for that moment of truth. And it's time to administer consequences so they learn. And that's pretty transactional. But ultimately, we want them to get there, and that's to be a good adult capable of making good decisions on their own. Same thing at work. We'll have people in multiple places on multiple different tasks or aspects of their job in different places than the Freedom V. When they demonstrate good judgment and they demonstrate the freedom and the ability to be self-governed, give them more freedom. Move them out. We don't want to control others. We want to give them as much freedom as we can. It makes our jobs as managers easier. And it makes their job more fulfilled as well. They feel like they have autonomy. They can make decisions. They're going to enjoy it more. They're going to buy into you're there for your company, your corporation. And they're going to feel like they have the ability to do their job in a manner they want to. They feel included and they're part of the team. They feel like they're part of something greater than themselves. They're recognized for their part. And they're a key part of it. And ultimately, with those three pieces of the recipe, they'll do real well. I think that's all the time for the questions we have. And if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you share it with others. Share it. Get this common vernacular out there where everybody can use it and we can create this culture where we have this shared language and shared value set. If you want to learn more about this, Much of this material was adopted from Herman Eben's Great Leaders and Great Relationship courses. Herman is a leadership consultant who owns and operates TrimTab Solutions, and he teaches these classes all over the world. I'd highly recommend any of these courses, to, especially for businesses or social organizations. He also does some one-on-one stuff. Without Herman and his lifelong work, none of this would have been possible. For Herman's material, a group of really great people came together and put all this together, and we took all of his stuff and just really simplified it. But if you want the deeper dive, go to greatleaders.com or greatrelationships.com. There's some online stuff you can sign up for. You pay for it, and you're involved in it for like a year or 18 months, and you really get the deep dive into leadership. Again, we appreciate everything, the listening and the putting the stuff into action, all the great questions tonight. Thanks for listening.
If you would like to offer feedback to any of the Servant Leadership podcasts, please go to our Facebook page and click on the comment section. You can also check us out online at trueservantleadership.com. Our site will soon have videos for the tools that we recommend using, and we will be adding additional content to the website in the future, including links for these podcasts. All of our material comes from the book Servant Leadership, Influencing Others to Get There by Leading a Transformational Life. If you're interested in the book, you can find it at Amazon.com. Both the paperback and the electronic version are available for order. The electronic version is only $1.99, and all of the proceeds from the book go to charity. Thanks for listening, influencing others to get there, serving others, and most of all, thanks for leading with the example of a transformational life set by our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.